Welcome to the Friday, April the 5th episode of Briefings with Butts. This is our 31st episode of the 2023-2024 school year. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff Butts, superintendent of the Metropolitan School District of Wayne Township. This weekly podcast is an important district communication tool for our staff, so thank you for carving out. Actually, today's going to be a little bit longer, and you're going to find out why. We've got a great guest today and lots to talk about, so prepare for an extended version of Briefings with Butts this week. But this is for each week to stay informed, connected, and most importantly, celebrate the incredible work that we do and the difference that we make in the lives of our students. First, I'd like to congratulate this week's Briefings with Butts trivia winner, Terry Howard at the Wayne Township Preschool. Congratulations, Terry. You win a Jeans Day for yourself and for your team. Let's go ahead and jump right in. It's been a great week in the MSD of Wayne Township. Congratulations to our Ben Davis boys basketball team for a fantastic season that took them all the way to the state championship at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. It was a hard-fought game against the Fishers Tigers, and the Giants came out as the IHSAA 4A state runner-up. Also during spring break, the Ben Davis Winter Winds earned Indiana State runner-up as well in the Indiana Percussion Association state finals. Good luck to the Winter Winds as they advance to the WGI World Championships. On Monday evening, the school board recognized several deserving individuals, including future Tech Grand Prize winner Misael Rodriguez, who is the 11th grade automotive technology student at Area 31 Career Center and Ben Davis High School. Also, DECA Award winners Kimberly Perez and Joleth Herrera received a DECA Gold rating for Ben Davis Spirit Shop, and the DECA Advisor of the Year, Rachel Jones. Congratulations, Mrs. Jones. We had several students receive journalism awards from the Indiana High School Press Association, including, again, Joleth Herrera for sports writing, Lyndon Johnson illustration, Raylan Hughes and Zoe Harris for news brief writing, and our sponsor, Tom Hayes, received the Columbia Scholastic Press Association Charles R. O'Malley Award for Excellence in Teaching, the highest award that can be received. Also, Leila Gomez Libario was named the Coalition on Adult Basic Education 2024 State Advocate. Very excited to have her advocating for adult education on behalf of Wayne Township. And District Behavior Specialist Tracy Foster received the Indiana Council for Exceptional Children 2024 Distinctive Service of the Year Award. Also, the Board of Education heard a legislative update from Dr. David Marcotte, Executive Director of the Indiana Urban Schools Association. On Tuesday, the school board visited North Wayne Elementary School. They learned about the theme of Intentionally Aligned with Action. Saw coding in action from Dominique and Mimi, two young ladies who are rising stars, and were treated to an anti-bullying performance by the Stomp and Rhythm Club and saw our math curriculum come to life in several of our classrooms. And then yesterday, the school board had a chance to visit the Wayne Township Transportation Center and receive updates on our current transportation systems as well as the plans to move into our new facility off of High School Road in 2025. We heard me mention that the school board was discussing legislation this past Monday. The session wrapped up just before spring break. And I'm excited today to welcome our guest, a key legislator who's been actively engaged in that process at the Indiana State House and an amazing advocate for the west side of Indianapolis and a few other areas. District 29 Senator J.D. Ford. Welcome, Senator Ford.
Well, thanks for having me.
You are a Wayne Township resident. We're very proud to say that. We do know that you represent other areas as well, not just Wayne Township, but up into Pike and also into Carmel area. Mm-hmm. So pretty big district that you represent. But we do appreciate it. I'd be remiss, Senator Ford, if I didn't mention you are a huge supporter here on the west side of economic and community development, and want to just say a very special thank you for your sponsorship of the Gateway Gallop, our 5K that supports the trails here on the west side every summer that starts here at Ben Davis High School, runs through the Farley neighborhood, and then finishes back at Ben Davis High School. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
Senator Ford, you are a second-term senator. Yes. In the State House. You were elected, I think, 2018, if I remember correctly. That's correct. was your first term.
On my birthday.
Yeah, well, and I wasn't going to mention your age because that would give it away, but you were a young senator at that time and still are, but what's your favorite part about being a senator?
You know, honestly, the most favorite part for me is the constituent correspondence that I get on a daily basis, but also just interacting with our students. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, my job is to, you know, be a legislator and to pass bills and amendments and things of that nature. But I love, you know, actively engaging our youth. You know, it's the old saying of, you know, planting the seeds and hope the oak trees grow, right? Well, yeah. I'm hoping to plant those seeds for those young folks in a career in public service, you know, and so that's probably one of my favorite job parts of the job.
A lot of people would say that we have a part-time legislature, but you're working full-time. It's not part-time.
Yes, it's a part-time in name. However, I can keep a 9-to-5 schedule all year long, you know, with meeting with folks about bills for the next upcoming session, which is a budget session. It'll be a very key, critical session. Mm-hmm. Ribbon-cutting ceremonies, meeting with constituents, meeting with businesses in my district, touring businesses in my district. You know, so it's it can keep you very busy. And then in this fall or in the summer, we call them summer study committees. So it's all the topics that we didn't get a chance to really kind of dive into. Mm-hmm. We actually do that in the summer, fall time and issue a report about how we're thinking about things.
Yeah. Now, your grandparents were in public service as well.
That's right.
Was that part of what inspired you to become a legislator?
Yeah, you know, honestly, you know, I just never really thought that I'd be in this spot. Of course, my grandparents were elected officials. And so I remember as a little boy, you know, being out to eat with them or at the bank with them, at the grocery store with them. And people would come up and say, thank you so much for whatever the issue that they were able to solve for that particular constituent. And I thought to myself, that's a pretty cool job that my grandparents get to help people. And then, you know, when I moved out here, bought a home here, and found out who my then state senator was, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I want to go find out more about this guy. And, you know, just didn't agree with any of his policies. He's a nice guy, but really wanted to, you know, make him get out there and defend the seat. And so I lost my first election in 2014, only by 2,000 votes. Mm-hmm. And gave it another whirl in 2018, and then got reelected last November of 22, and I serve a 4-year term.
Yeah. So senators serve 4-year term. We know our representatives serve 2. We've had Representative Pack on here previously as well. So you mentioned your predecessor, the individual that you beat in 2018. He was a Republican. You are a Democrat.
Correct.
We are in a supermajority state.
Yes.
Meaning that our Senate, House, and the governor's office all are Republican, which means that you're of the minority in the Senate, and also means that allows you to be active in a lot of committees.
Yes.
Because there are fewer of you in the Senate.
There's only 10 Senate Democrats, 40 Republicans, for a total of 50 in our state Senate.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to mention a couple of the committees that you're on, just to let our listeners, our staff know how active you are. You are the ranking minority member of the Education and Career Development Committee, the ranking minority member of Elections Committee, the ranking minority member for Ethics, Family, and Children's Services. You also serve on Health and Provider Services, Local Government, Rules, and Legislative Procedures. How do you keep up with all of that?
Well, first let me say, you were mentioning about, you know, the numbers of the state Senate. You know, I just want to say my personal thoughts on that is that it's just not healthy to mm-hmm. have one party control all three branches of government in our state.
We agree.
You know, and I think, you know, good policy comes from the push and pull, the debate, the ironing out things before it actually gets signed into law before our governor. But to your question, I love, the workload is heavy, but I love being on those many committees because it allows me to have my hands in different parts of what's going on in Indiana, particularly in the education space. And to the listeners, RMM, or ranking minority member, basically means that I'm just the top Democrat on that particular committee. So there's, on the education committee, there's 4 of us, myself, mm-hmm. Senator Hundley, who is a principal.
And former Wayne Township teacher.
Teacher, yes, yeah. Absolutely. Senator Yoder, who is a college professor. And then Senator
Kador. Over in Terre Haute.
Yeah, yeah. Bloomington.
Bloomington, yeah.
And then Senator Fatty Kador, who is the neighbor to my east, who has a parent. And, you know, I think for us, we have a good snapshot of what Indiana looks like in our committee.
Yeah. I know Senator Kador talks a lot about his daughter's education in Washington Township,
and
certainly has a great perspective there as well. You're the first person. We talk a lot about college-going culture, and we're getting into more of the workplace readiness skills and apprenticeships and internships and workplace learning experiences. But we know that we have focused a lot on our first-generation college students, and you are a first-generation college graduate. You earned your bachelor's in political science and criminal justice at the University of Akron, and then your master's of science education with an emphasis on human services at Purdue. Boiler up. Mm-hmm. Great to see them in the Final Four. That's an aside for another episode. But how did those experiences for you and your life experiences impact your work as a legislator?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, each of us at the State House, we bring our own experience, we bring our own credentials, and part of my experience, and also, as you mentioned, I'm one of the younger members of the State Senate, you know, I look at how my votes impact families here on the West Side. Mm-hmm. You know, I look through the lens of, is this going to make a student's job easier or more difficult when mm-hmm. they're applying for college or, you know, an apprenticeship or whatever the case may be? You know, and so, you know, as a first generation college student, I want to make sure that those students, you know, I think we do a really good job of getting students off to college, but at the same time, I don't think we do the best job of, you know, keeping them on the campus. Right. And so, you know, I look through all that. I look through the lens of that. My master's degree was in human services. So I tend to take a look at, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, making sure that, you know, are citizens safe? Do they have clean air, clean water, housing, you know, things of that nature? And so that's what kind of, you know, informs me when I take my votes.
Yeah. I think back to my childhood, and I had the pleasure of a show called Schoolhouse Rock.
Yes.
That tended to teach us lots of different things. And we talk in the state about civics education and whether or not our children are well prepared and know really what civics is all about. And so before we get into talking about some of what happened in the last session, would you give us a little civics education on how does a bill happen? What's the process that goes through before it ends up on the governor's desk?
Well, this is where they call it the sausage is being made, right?
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, it's pretty much exactly what you've seen on Schoolhouse Rock, but I will tell you, it just gets a little messy because there are humans involved in this with different personalities, with different agendas, and you have to think about this. I mean, I'm one of 150 people, House and Senate mm-hmm. all together. And I always ask the students, I was like, do you think that's easy or difficult? And they're always like, difficult. I'm like, yeah, because it's, you'd have to convince 150 or 149 of your friends that you want chocolate instead of vanilla ice cream, right? But so it's very easy, actually, for me, because all I need to do is send an email to our Legislative Services Agency, which is the nonpartisan bill writing group. They also write the amendments as well. And I'll say, I'd like popcorn to be our state snack. And then they research to see if we actually have a law in the books about that. Sometimes I will say, I want to do this. And they're like, well, it's already in law. Or I want to do this. And I'm like, well, we haven't done that before. And here's the proper place in the code. So all I have to do is really just, and a lot of the stuff that I do comes from constituent correspondence. Someone will say, hey, you know, I experienced this at the BMV and I found out this is a loophole. Can you fix this for me? And so we've, you know, listened to constituents and we've filed bills based upon that. But once it gets filed, you know, it then gets assigned to a committee. And then the committee then will, the committee chairman will then decide, okay, does this go on the docket to get a hearing or does it die in committee? Unfortunately, a lot of my stuff dies in committee. So I have to work really hard with the committee chairman to, you know, convince him or her that this is an important topic for us to talk about.
And some of that, sorry to cut you off, but that's some good. Of that is also a result of partisan politics.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, this is where we need your listeners and the public to really be engaged, is because if there's a topic that you really want to see that the legislature take up, you know, then we should hear from you. So that way we can print off those emails or tally up those emails and take it to the chairman and say, look, I'm getting blasted. You know, this is a topic that people really care about. For example, people ask me all the time, why can't we have citizen ballot initiatives? Well, you know, our state constitution doesn't allow that. Mm-hmm. And we would have to change the constitution, and that would have to go through two separate General Assembly sessions. So you know, but it's stuff like that that people can, you know, email me to inform.
Similar
me
to what we did with property tax caps in 2009, yes. I believe mm-hmm. was the time frame of that. It was the bill was introduced, went through, it was a constitutional amendment.
That's right.
Went through two different election cycles or two different cycles of balloting, and the state voters decided that that was going to become a constitutional amendment. We were going to cap property taxes.
That's right. Yep. And we're still seeing the effects of that, unfortunately. But I will say that, you know, once it gets out of committee, so let's say, for example, the chairman does decide to hear it, then, you know, we'll have a public hearing on it. People can come down and testify. If it passes out of committee, then it moves to the full floor of the state Senate on what we call second reading. And that's where any senator in the chamber can attach any amendments to that bill. And this is where the Senate Democrats really work really hard because a lot of our policy proposals we will attach as amendments. And sometimes our Republican colleagues will accept those amendments. For example, we're going to talk about SB 1. I had an amendment to that bill, which my colleagues accepted. And sometimes they don't. And, you know, but that's where we can kind of force the issue, force a vote, and get them on the record. You know, do they support one issue or not? Passes second reading, then it goes to the third reading. That's where the entire Senate will take another look at the bill, do a final vote, and then once it passes the third reading, then it goes over to the House to say the same process all over again. If it passes the House, comes back to the Senate, the bill author can concur or dissent. If they concur, it goes straight to the governor for a signature.
And so, not to gloss over that, but when it goes over to the House, the sponsor in the House has an opportunity, or that committee that it gets assigned to has the opportunity to make changes.
That's right.
And so when it comes back to the Senate, then the original author has to either say, I accept those changes, which is the concur, or I don't.
Right. Dissent. Yeah. That's the dissent. Yep. And so if they concur, then it goes straight to the governor for a signature. If they dissent, then we take the bill to what we call a conference committee process. And this is where it gets really tricky because these conference committee processes move very quickly. Sometimes we're only there for 30 seconds. Sometimes we're there for 25 minutes, 30 minutes, sometimes an hour, just depending on how controversial the topic is. But if they dissent, then that's the opportunity for the House and Senate to come together and negotiate to finally get the bill to a good place to get it to the governor. If they don't, then unfortunately, sometimes it dies.
And one data point that came out, the conference committee used to involve a lot of testimony and a lot of back and forth and used to be a little bit lengthier process. Some data that came out just recently said that the average conference committee in this last session, the 2024 session, was, I think, 7.13 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
So pretty quick.
Yes, very, very quick. And honestly, you know, I hear from my constituents that how can I keep up? How do I know? And unfortunately, I always have to tell them, and you have to pay really close attention, otherwise you'll miss a lot.
Yeah.
And it's designed to be that way.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so this was a short session. It was a non-budget session, and the statutorily did not have to go as long. Was able to conclude earlier. Mm-hmm. But even in this short session, 150 legislators.
Yes.
We have 100 in the House, 50 in the Senate. 739 bills were introduced, and you mentioned constituents will come to you and say, hey, we want to see this. Well, that happens with all 150 legislators. Mm-hmm. And so all those 150 legislators have a maximum amount of bills that they are able to introduce or to propose.
10 in the Senate, 5 in the House.
Okay. And even though we heard from the Speaker of the House and Senate Pro Tem before the session, this is going to be a non-controversial session. We're going to get in, we're going to get out, we're not going to deal with much, right?
Yes.
But 739 bills, that seems like a lot.
It is a lot. It is a lot. And, you know, and I don't really envy my colleagues because on the other side, because they have to then kind of distill that down and pick and choose which ones. And even their own people will get passed over on some of their bills. Some of their own people don't have the opportunity to get their bills heard. So it is a lot of bills.
For and sometimes, to be fair, to be transparent, sometimes 739 bills, there may be four or five of them that are pretty similar.
Yeah.
That have some similar language
that
into them and can be consolidated over the course of the session. Of those 739, 175, just under 25%, actually passed. They actually went through the whole process and went to the governor's desk. We know the governor vetoed a couple of those, but certainly 175 were passed through. So some of those are priority bills, and we're going to talk about a few of those, but what is a priority bill? When we say to our staff, this is a priority bill, or they hear that in the media, what does that mean?
Yeah, so in the Senate, the majority party, which is the Republican Party at the moment, they reserve Senate Bill 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 as their priority bills. So if you hear SB 1, that's like an super duper important bill. That's right. The one they really want through, which we're going to talk about here in a few minutes. Yep. But yeah, so any of those numbers, 1 through 10 is the priority bill for the Senate. Now the House, it'll be 1001 through 10. So House Bill 1001, 1002, 1003, et cetera. Those are the priority bills for the House Republicans.
Wow. So we know, and by the way, in the beginning of the biennium, the long session, or what we call the budget session, 1001 is always the budget bill, because yes, the House always does the original draft of the budget. So in a short session, 1001 would be another priority bill. But in the budget session, 1001 is the budget bill.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about, I've picked out five of these priority, actually two of the priority bills, and then a few other bills that we might be able to talk a little bit about. You mentioned Senate, now Senate Enrolled Act. Once it gets passed and then goes to the governor, it becomes an enrolled act, no longer Senate bill. But Senate Enrolled Act 1, when this was introduced, it was authored by, and we're going to hear some of these names several times, Senator Linda Rogers, Senator Jeff Rotz, who happens to be the chair of the Senate Education and Career Development Committee, and then also Senator Brian Buchanan. Those were the co-authors. But when it was introduced, there were over 20 co-authors or authors as well that signed on. So 23, 25 or so right off the bat, mm-hmm, out of 50, yeah, who said, "This is we're our name's on this." Yeah. And so this was the bill that talked about reading skills. None of us could argue that reading skills are critically important. We know that they're essential for success. But this one really talked about third grade retention and for not passing the iRead. There's some exceptions in there, good cause exemptions, and obviously we're going to work through those at the local level. But talk a little bit about Senate Bill 1 or Senate Enrolled Act 1 and your amendment that you had added to that.
Yeah. So you mentioned, when you see a bunch of names underneath the bill, that's really the senator saying, we're signing on to this, right? Yes. And the more co-sponsors, the more people you can get on your bill, the more evidence you're kind of showing your colleagues that, hey, look, this is something that we really want to do, right? Yeah. I did not attach my name to that bill, and I'll tell you why. Is that like you, and I want to emphatically state for our listeners, is that, yes, we do have a reading problem in our state. And there's no doubt about that. Even Eli Lilly has tried to help, send some money to the state's way to help address this issue. But, I can't help but think that, my colleagues have been in charge for the past 20 years, and now all of a sudden they're concerned about this problem. We've had this problem for quite some time now, a couple, mm-hmm, years, at least going back, 10 years. And so I think because, and this is just my personal thoughts, Lilly shined a big spotlight on this. Now everyone's like, oh, we got to do something about this. And I just think that's very disingenuous. And then to pass Senate Enrolled Act 1 without really understanding why our kids aren't reading by the third grade level, which is the question that I asked Secretary Jenner in our committee. I said, help me understand, why is, our third graders not reading by the third grade level? Is it because they're truant? Is it because they're experiencing trauma? Is it because of, whatever else that might be going on within the home or at school? To this day, I still do not have an answer to that. And so we swung a big sledgehammer as opposed to being very surgical about this approach. And I just don't think that was the right way to go. And I think it asked a lot of our teachers to do more with less. And I just didn't agree with the approach.
Well, we know the research, obviously, about retention is not good. A student who's retained at one time has a 50% chance of not completing high school. Retained two times, the research would say 100% chance that they're not going to complete high school. And we could talk about this bill for the next hour and go back and forth on this. But certainly, this is, at least in my career, this is the third time in Indiana that we've done this. Tried the retention bill. We tried it early 2000s. We tried it again right around 2010, 12, something around that area. So about every 10 years, we give this thing a shot.
Yes.
It lasts about 2 years, and then we decide that maybe this isn't the right approach.
That's
and
right.
So, we do have an opportunity here, especially with iRead 3 now being given at the second grade level, to also early identify and to hopefully do some intervention in the summer and earlier intervention than we would have done otherwise. and certainly identify some deficiencies earlier. So we put a lot of emphasis on this in the MSD of Wayne Township. The school board has definitely provided some support financially and with some increased staffing, and so we're looking forward to seeing those come into play. And we are part of the literacy cadre with the Indiana Department of Education, so I know our staff is all aware of that, but just wanted to highlight some of those things. And those are really results of some of the discussions that were going on at the State House this year and the opportunities that were provided to us with that funding that you mentioned, Senator, from Lilly and other of the individuals and the corporations that are really providing some supports there.
Can I just add one more thing?
Yeah, absolutely, please.
I just really want to thank you, Dr. Butts, because your presence at the State House, I saw you there, especially with Dr. David Marcotte with the Indiana Urban Schools Association, and you know I lean on you all. You are the experts in the field, and so thank you for being there. And also thank you to the listeners. I received many emails, you know, constituent correspondence saying, we agree that there's a problem, and we agree we need to do something, but this isn't the right approach. And so, you know, that's what informs my vote. And the amendment that I attached to the bill basically says, hey, school corporations, can you please set up an appeals process to work with families? Because don't forget, this is mandatory retention, right? And so there could be some additional things that are going on that may not be aware. And so that's what that amendment did. And my Republican colleagues accepted that and attached it to the bill.
Disability, language barrier, those are some of the good cause exemptions that exist. Obviously, previous retention is one of those things that exists in there as well. So all great opportunities to have discussions with families about where their children are at the end of the third grade with their reading comprehension. Moving into Senate Enrolled Act 6, also a priority bill, similar but looks at our students beyond third grade, grades 4 through 8, and really has pushed the department to develop a tool or some identifiers that would indicate that a student is not reading at grade level in the 4th through 8th grade, and then trying to provide some interventions there. And this one was called the Reading Proficiency Bill, also authored by Senator Jeff Rotz and Senator Linda Rogers.
Yes.
Thoughts on Senate Enrolled Act 6?
Yes, so I voted against SEA 1, and I voted for SEA 6. And the reason I voted for it was because, just as you mentioned, it just adds more levels and layers of protection for these students. It's, you know, I'm happy to hear the state say, okay, you didn't pass the third grade, right? But if you keep moving through the process, you should also get services and support. And so this is one way for the state to recognize that. And also, as you mentioned, it kind of makes the Department of Education get a little bit more involved and create a plan. Yeah. How are we going to address this? And So this is one that I supported because I felt like this was the right step for us.
One of the things we talk about, especially in urban schools, and of course Wayne Township is an urban district, but one of the things we talk about is our teachers don't have control over where children are academically when they come into the classroom. We do have control what happens once they get there. We know with our mobility rate and with our multilingual learners that we are seeing joining our student population, that there's just lots of factors that our teachers are working with. And we have always said, if our students will stay with us over time, we know that they'll continue to grow and we can get them there. But sometimes that they come in at a point in which that getting over that hurdle, that short period of time, is really a challenge. So really appreciate Senate Enrolled Act 6 and the opportunities we're going to have there.
Yeah, and can I just say one more thing?
Absolutely.
You know, I just think about my own personal experience. You know, I just remember as a young student being very anxious about taking tests. And even, you know, as I got older, I didn't do well on the ACT, SAT, but I managed to get through college and get through a master's degree and be a state senator. So, you know, I think that resonates with a lot of people, you know, that a test is just a measurement at that particular snapshot of time. It's not, to me, it's not a measurement of the overall work ethic of the student or just the student overall, you know, and I think we've really forgotten a lot about that. I think our state loves testing. But, you know, I personally feel like, you know, with the teachers in the classroom on a day-to-day basis, they're the best people to, measure the student.
Well, and I know we've had testimony from some high-ranking Republican senators, even that have said, at third grade, I was not reading well, and had this bill been in place when I was in third grade, it may have negatively impacted me. But I am now sitting here on the Senate floor, and I'm a leader in the state, and I'm doing great things for people.
It was very personal testimony, and it was very emotional. You could tell.
Yeah. So we appreciate when people are able to give their personal story and to put some context to that.
And be vulnerable.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, we see the impact that cell phones are having and social media are having on students' abilities to be engaged,
yes.
Not only in the classroom, but also with each other. We see the impact that social media is having on mental health with our students and some of the challenges that brings. And certainly, we know that it's happening at the federal level with testimony that's going on in Congress, and we're seeing it here locally. And we've seen some states who have completely banned all the utilization of communication devices, but Senate Enrolled Act 185, again, authored by Senator Jeff Rotz, Senator Stacey Donato, really laid down some guidelines for schools to limit the use of communication devices during instructional time.
Mm-hmm.
I personally supported this bill.
Yes, I did too.
I would have supported even stricter regulations on this, just from my own personal experience. But I also, you know, to be vulnerable and to be transparent, this is something I struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
I have my phone out at all times.
Yes.
It's always, every time it buzzes or my Apple Watch buzzes, I'm always looking to see what messages come in and
yes.
and how and it distracts me from what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It distracts me from the task that I'm currently engaged in. And so thoughts on this one?
Yeah, this one was tough. And like you, Dr. Butts, I also struggle with that buzzing of the devices.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when I first got elected, you know, I put the Senate email on my phone and I was waking up responding to emails, going to bed, responding to emails. I mean, it was 24/7, right?
Yeah.
And I actually took that off my phone. And I said, you know, I will respond in a timely manner. But I'm one person representing 130,000 people. And so if they don't get a response back, like within 15 minutes, I apologize, but I'll get you back at least within 24 or 48
sure.
hours. Right.
Which is better than most.
Yes, right. and even I don't do a good job of that, right? I do my very best, but it is difficult from time to time. You know, this bill was hard because, you know, my grandpa was a school teacher, principal. My sister's a teacher. And I just firmly believe and fundamentally believe that instructional time should be sacred,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that this kind of gives you guys at the local level a little bit of a point the finger at the state, the bad guys, right?
Sure.
Well, the state's making us do this. You know,
it's a law now.
It's a law, right? but in, you know, a couple of parents, you know, were like, "Well, what if I want to get a hold of my kid? You know, they're not going to have their phone with them." It's like, well, they'll be placed in a pouch in the classroom. So if something terrible would happen, God forbid, you know, there's access to the phones,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that all we're asking is that when the teacher is standing in front of the students, you know, giving the instruction, that everyone's paying attention and not on their phones.
Yeah. And I shared with our administrators yesterday, secondary administrators primarily, that my methodology here, I really want to sit down. I'm going to have focus groups with students. I'm going to have focus groups with parents. I'm going to have focus groups with teachers and with administrators just to get their thoughts and perspectives on this before we take a policy to the Board of Education that needs to be passed by July 1st. That's part of the requirement. So this will be enacted for the 24-25 school year, but certainly want to be responsive to what we're hearing and not be too restrictive to what's happening with regard to communication devices. You know, I mentioned Senator Ford to others when I have a conversation about this. When my mother wanted to get a hold of me, she called the office and they sent a note, right?
Yes.
If they thought it was important enough to actually pull me out of class,
right,
or for me to come down during lunch or whatever that situation may have been. So that's how my mother was able to get in touch with me if she needed to. And also, we have landlines, we have phones in every single classroom. So should a true emergency come up, and I think that's really what we need to define as true emergency, then we do have phones in the classrooms that we can get a hold of children.
Yep.
One of the comments that was made that I thought was interesting yesterday regarding the utilization of communication devices is that students have become so reliant and dependent upon them that we're going to have to be ready to deal with the mental health aspect of them not having access to that, which I thought was an interesting perspective, that we have become so reliant upon those that we're going to have to be prepared to counsel children that it's okay not to have that device.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe, and research has shown in those states that have already done this, better interaction with students. They actually talk to each other. Fewer engagements of violence and bullying and those kinds of things that are happening in the schools and in the classrooms and the hallways.
Yes.
And so I'm looking forward to seeing the outcome of the board policy here in the MSD of Wayne Township, and then talking to my colleagues across the state to see what's working well.
Mm-hmm.
Want to shift a little bit. So not new phenomena, but I'll say within the last 10 years, a phenomenon that has grown is what's called education matters bills. And education matters is kind of a generic term for come one, come all, put everything in here that doesn't fit anywhere else. And so we just call it, there's lots of different terminology for these bills, but they're called education matters bills. And sometimes the provisions in these bills are not even connected, but one of those bills this session was Senate Enrolled Act 270. Again, Senator Linda Rogers, Senator Jeff Rotz, Senator Donato had this Senate Enrolled Act 270, requires the sharing of operations fund dollars. It's been discussion in the state for a long time. When charter schools first were proposed back in the Daniels administration, they were proposed as a cost-effective way to provide education for parents who choose to send their children to a charter school. And these are outside of some of the regulations of traditional public schools. They're obviously run by other organizations and all the many different configurations that go there. But we know that most of those charter schools are located in just a few counties in the state. And this legislation, Senate Enrolled Act 270, is limited to Lake County, Marion County, St. Joe County, and Vandenberg counties only. So those four counties. And what it says basically is that if a student is in one of those counties, so MSD of Wayne Township in Marion County, and goes to a charter school, the school districts, the traditional public school districts in that county, have to share the property tax revenue that they're generating for their operations fund, which is interesting because, you know, we have contiguous counties like Hendricks County. We go to our north and look at Hamilton County. So if a student from Avon, Indiana, Avon School Corporation, goes to a charter in Marion County, Avon is not required to share their property tax revenue because they are not in one of those four counties that this bill is limited to. But if MSD of Wayne Township student happens to go to a charter school, even in which I don't think there is one in Hendricks, but it happened to go to one in Hendricks, we would still have to share revenue there. So there obviously that's one of the challenges. It's one of the ripple effects, or I guess maybe unintended consequences of a bill like this. But the impact that legislative services, you mentioned legislative services earlier, nonpartisan group that does a lot of analysis for the State House and, mm-hmm. and the General Assembly, the impact for MSD of Wayne Township and our operations fund, and understanding that's a capped fund, so we already lose a significant number of dollars that could be generated there, but the impact is $170,000 in 2025 that would be sent to charter schools and not be able to be utilized here in the MSD of Wayne Township from Wayne Township property tax dollars, and $193,000 in 2026. This obviously has been a long time coming, a lot of discussion, and we're hearing that there's going to be a lot more change coming from funding standpoint in the next session, obviously a budget session. But what are your thoughts on this idea of, it's a really challenging conversation because I don't think anybody would disagree that parents should have choice.
Yes.
But under the premise of how charter schools were set up and how they were to operate, for us to be sending tax dollars within the area of MSD of Wayne Township, the legal boundaries of MSD of Wayne Township, to a school that is not even in our boundaries because one of our children decides, their parents decide that they want to take them there, that seems challenging for me to justify.
That's right. Yes. And to your point, you know, I think you're exactly right. Parents should have the choice to send their kids where they feel like they're going to get the best education. I don't disagree with that. I do take issue that 90% of our kids are attending public schools, but not 90% of the funding are going to the public mm-hmm. schools. So if that was happening, sure. If we were able to fully fund all of our public schools in our state, who, by the way, take all children, they don't get to pick and choose, right?
Right.
Then if we fully fund them and we had extra money left over, then awesome. Like, let's carve some of that money out for parents to, you know, educate their children how they want to educate them. But that's not what's happening in our state. You know, money is being siphoned away from our public schools to these different grants and private schools and the choice scholarships and all that stuff. And so you'll hear my Republican colleagues say, which is very, very clever, this is the most money we've given education, which is true.
Right.
What they're not telling you is where's the money going? And right. I think that's where we as the public need to be informed about where is the money going.
Mm-hmm. And we've often said, and this is not part of this bill, but we've also talked about legislation that was passed in the last session, the 2023 session, about textbook rental and getting rid of textbook rental fees and providing a line item budget for that for districts, a per pupil amount of money. But we also know, and one of the things that we're watching very closely as school personnel, is while there is a line item budget for that now, we can see that going away and just becoming part of the education fund, just yes. or the overall education fund in the next couple budget sessions,
yep.
and that just getting absorbed
yes.
Into that.
Yep.
And I think the other challenge that we run into, obviously, with the changing dynamic of our charter schools, is just the idea of parent choice. We all believe in parent choice. You mentioned 90% of parents choose to send their children to a traditional public school, but the voucher system has been set up, and vouchers are for private education. We all know that those have changed over time from what they were originally designed to do with having to attend a public school and the income requirements, et cetera. But the way the state budget works is vouchers are funded first, and then the rest of the proportional share is distributed across the traditional publics. And so
yes.
when we talk about vouchers impacting every school district in the state of Indiana, it's because whether or not you have a child who is utilizing a voucher or children that are utilizing a voucher, you still are losing a proportional share of those dollars that otherwise would have gone to your traditional public in the state budget, just the way that it's designed.
Yep. And I'm particularly sensitive to this issue because this past month, there's a charter school going into Pike Township. It's actually right on the border of Pike and Washington Township. And Pike Township, I think, is going out for a referendum.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they'll hopefully be successful. I'm hoping for the very best for them. But because of 270, they'll not have to share
right.
those dollars with that particular charter school, which, by the way, their authorizer isn't even from our community. It's
mm-hmm.
Trine University up north. And so I just kind of take issue with that. But the other thing I wanted to mention about the choice scholarships is I did have a bill. You know, our Indiana Supreme Court says that the money kind of follows the student. So it's not technically coming from the state budget.
Right.
It's the parents' dollars who
yeah.
then give it to the private schools. Right.
Right.
But the genesis of it is the state budget. It's our taxpayer dollars.
Correct.
And so I tried to, you know, clarify that. Unfortunately, that bill didn't get a hearing. And my last point, you mentioned you've been saying Senator Rotz a lot. He's the chairman of the Education Committee in the Senate, and so you will hear his name a lot.
Yeah.
And these Education Matters bills, you're exactly right. They're lumping everything they possibly can into that one bill. I call it a Christmas tree bill because it's just a bunch of gifts, you know, to folks who are, you know, down at the legislature.
Sometimes we on our side, we call it a garbage bill.
Okay.
You call it Christmas tree, we call it garbage. throw it all in the same
Either
can.
One works.
Throw it
That's
all in the
right.
same can. All perspective, right?
Yes.
Well, I know that, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you sticking with us. This is a long one, but we don't often have an opportunity to have such a distinguished guest on our show and to talk about such important issues. Just appreciate Senator Ford sharing all of his perspectives, but wanted to talk about one more bill that really has been discussed quite a bit, and that's Senate Enrolled Act 282. This also, Senator Rotz, Senator Rogers, Senator Donato authored this bill. This is on absenteeism and school attendance and really changes the way that we're looking at and kind of putting some teeth into students being in the classroom. And there's some provisions here, and we are meeting actually with Prosecutor Ryan Mears here in Marion County to talk about how Marion County is going to be dealing with this specifically in the prosecutor's office, because they do need to be involved in this process as determined by Senate Enrolled Act 282. But there's also a lot of other provisions in this. And so, again, I don't think anybody can argue that you can't learn if you're not in school. And trying to find a way, and this was one that was really hard, even on the school level, to come up with something that wasn't punitive and negatively impacting families and involving the court system, to get some additional pressure or some additional incentive to get students in school. So
yeah.
talk about kind of your discussions that you had on this bill and how you see this rolling out.
Yeah, so when it first came through the Senate Education Committee, it was not a bill I could support at that time. And that was, like you had mentioned, it was really punitive in nature. And to some degree, perhaps it should be, but this was, I think, over the top. And I think our colleagues on the Senate Education Committee recognized that, and I think we changed it to then make it just a study committee. And then went it over to the House, and then this is where it became one of those Christmas tree bills, is that they gutted the bill, and they just started adding different projects into that bill. Mm-hmm. But then it came back, and I think we were able to kind of restore it back to a little bit of just having us take a longer, deeper look into what's going on with truancy in our state.
Yeah. So we're looking at rolling that out. Obviously, we're working with the prosecutor's office. We'll be working with some internal structures and making sure that we have everything prepared because it's a rolling 10-week window of time that we'll be looking at. It's not just the semester or a quarter or a full year, but it's 5 absences within a 10-week rolling window of time, and then some provisions that go there that involve meeting with families and sending some information to the prosecutor's office and just working through that. So we'll look at it, rolling that out and sharing some additional information as we get into the next school year. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is 5 of the 175 bills that were passed during the 123rd General Assembly. Whew. That's a lot. Senator Ford, just want to thank you for your time. Thank you on behalf of the MSD of Wayne Township. And personally, as one of your constituents, I live in your district, and just want to say thank you for all that you do for the west side of Indianapolis. And I know you represent other areas as well, but you're my senator.
Yes.
So I appreciate what you do here for Wayne Township and your tireless advocacy for Senate District 29. And those issues that you really believe are most important. So thank you. I appreciate you being my guest today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. And I was at the boys basketball game and was so proud of the Giants.
Yeah.
It's just an honor to represent this community in our state house. And I encourage anyone to reach out. I can be reached at s29@iga.in.gov.
Appreciate your willingness to be so open and available to people. I know that you meet at coffee houses and you meet at various places and you're always posting those on your social media accounts for people to come just join you and share their opinions.
If you think I'm doing a good job, come out. If you don't think I'm doing a good job, come out. because I love to hear the feedback. So thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget all MSD of Wayne Township schools and offices will be closed on Monday, April the 8th for the solar eclipse. Thanks to the Wayne Township Education Foundation and the generous support of Schmidt Associates, nearly 40,000 solar glasses have been distributed to our students, staff, community members, and our students' parents so they can safely observe this historic event. And next Thursday, we get to celebrate the top 30 students in the Ben Davis High School class of 2024 for their outstanding academic achievements and the top GPAs at Ben Davis High School. Well, that's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest on what's happening in the MSD of Wayne Township. Before we wrap up this episode, I want to end with our mission to activate and accelerate student learning and our vision to develop great people. Thank you for the impact you make each and every day. And remember, I am Wayne, you are Wayne, we are Wayne. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.